Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Best not to have eyelashes because they brush against your glasses.
They do brush against the glasses, you know, when they get particularly long, I'd give them a little trim.
The cat's whiskers.
Pull your glasses out a little.
I'm lying, like.
Yeah. Like, that is very quick. Very quick to share that as a potential thing. Hello, everyone. It's the Red Bed Originals podcast. I'm Paul Machin, Chris Page, Chloe Bloxham, Dan Club with me for this one. Yeah, as well as discussing the at times horrendous impact of a long eyelash on glasses wearers. We are going to be going back to the dim and distant past of midweek last week and Liverpool's last game of football, which was the win over Fulham in the EFL Cup first leg semi-final. I have not once said those words in the correct order in a week and a half of talking about that game, by the way. I've thrown all kinds of those words in random orders.
It does beg the question, why are we still talking about that game?
Because we are on the break and we haven't discussed it on the podcast yet. So here we are. And what else are we going to do?
I've got no idea. Chris, I did think, I was like, well, we should probably discuss something else. I was like, oh, then we'll just have to think of something else.
How many legs or how much legs have we got in the being a bit annoyed at Mo Salah equalising with a penalty in AFCON? We'll definitely do that a bit later on. But yeah, we're going to do full, but more as a jumping off point to talk about some of the players who performed and maybe didn't perform in that game and what's to come for them in the coming weeks as well. And yeah, we're going to talk a bit about Sven-Göran Eriksson's obviously rather sad announcement. We're going to be doing a little bit on AFCON, a bit on a couple of the youth players who've been recalled or loaned out. But first, before we do, just want to draw your attention to the fact that we have added a third date to our official Red Men TV tour. We are going to London on the 24th of April. We're at the Indigo at the O2, which is very exciting because I had to double check that. For anyone of a certain age, what is the O2 in London?
It used to be a big fucking...
The Millennium Dome.
Millennium Dome.
There's the Millennium Dome. Anyone go to the Millennium Dome?
No. Never.
Anyone in the comments? I mean, this is before you weren't even born.
No clue what you're going on about.
Do you know, you know what the Millennium Dome is?
No.
What? Never seen it.
No.
Big white dome thing.
It's the mad dome arena in London. You will surely all be aware of the...
Now, there's a big dome arena in London now. ABBA play there every night, don't they? It's a different one.
It's the O2. It's the O2 arena in London now, but it used to be called the Millennium Dome because it was built to celebrate the millennium.
Is that why it was called the Millennium Dome? Wow.
But it was home to what you call... edutainment. So you go, it was meant as this big tourist attraction in the country, and I remember going down once with my family, and it was a bunch of like, and here's a giant table, football table, but the moral of the story is everyone's got to work together to win. Fuck off. It was a huge...
Sounds like the Science Place of Pleasure Island.
It was a bit like that. It was a bit like the Science Place of Pleasure Island. There's another reference. Do you know what Pleasure Island was? Jesus Christ.
Wouldn't it be better if it was a hangar for a life-size Millennium Falcon?
Yes, infinitely better.
That's what they should have done.
Star Wars wasn't as cool back then, was it? Anyway, yeah, we're playing there on the 24th of April. That's what I was talking about. You can go to axs.com, search Redmen, and the tickets will come up on there, as I have evidence for anyone who's watching on YouTube right now. If we've There we go. Bon Jovi. And also, obviously, we're going to Belfast and Dublin as well. You can get them on ticketmaster.ie. Just search, or you just search Redmen TV Live and just hope for the best on Google. But yeah, really, really good stuff. We've got Keo with us as well. So yeah, we've got some actual talent alongside alongside Chris and Steve. So yeah, come and join us. It promises to be very, very good fun as well on a Wednesday, on a wild Wednesday in London.
I missed the Wednesday.
Missed the Wednesday night. Yeah, absolutely. Turn it on. Right. Okay. Sad. Right. Let's dive into it then. So Liverpool 2, Fulham 1. If anyone can actually remember this game, because it does feel like a lifetime ago. Dan, it was just a tricky test. Ultimately, I think there was something to that game where it's Fulham. And we were talking, the three of us, we were heading towards that game about what the atmosphere would be like, and there being something about the fact that they gave us a tough game before Christmas actually probably helped sharpen the minds a little bit for it. I thought Liverpool, despite the fact that they obviously didn't break the deadlock, I thought they started the game really well. And the goal was a little bit of like a bit of a sucker punch.
Yeah, I thought that as well, to be honest with you. I was relatively at peace and comfortable with Liverpool's first half performance. I've seen a lot of negativity sort of in the aftermath.
Because you're a social media manager.
Yeah, that's a point. Yeah, that is a very good point. Yeah, but I just felt like everyone went a little bit overboard, really. And I think we lacked a little bit of cutting edge. I think we lacked a little bit of sharpness in the final third, especially. But for the most part, particularly the first 45 minutes, when obviously we went in 1-0 down, felt like we were in the ascendancy. We were dominating possession. We had loads of the ball in their final third. Just for whatever reason, it wasn't quite clicking. I sort of put it down to a bit of not being on the same wavelength, certainly on that right-hand side triangle where you've normally got Trent, Salah, Szoboszlai, who just work in unison so well. All of a sudden, it was Connor Bradley, Gravenberch and Elliot, and they weren't quite clicking. Yeah. So I wasn't overly concerned with it. It felt like if we did something similar in the second half, results would come, and obviously that's how it turned out.
I thought we were shitting first.
Exactly.
I'll stand up for the Twitter fans.
I am with Chris.
We were just... I just felt we would look tired more than anything. Yeah. Not like we were particularly bad in any way, shape or form, but like I didn't go on Twitter, don't get me wrong. I was at the game for
you're
a start.
You were in the Kenny.
I was basically, I lived in Twitter for 45 minutes. Didn't need to go online, but no, I just thought we were a bit slow in anything we did, you know, just a bit lackadaisical in the top end of the pitch and stuff. And I thought it was a really disappointing first half performance, because I remember us talking about it the next day, and I was like, it's funny, isn't it, you can just watch two separate games of footy, can't you, two people, because we basically had the same view. You were in the lower Kenny, I was in the upper Kenny, and I've come away with a completely different thought about the first half.
I get it, it was far from perfect, and I get the point on being slow, especially like I say, when it got down to the business end of the pitch, it definitely wasn't clicking, and it was a little bit passive at times. Again, there's a couple of moments we spoke about where the ball could have gone quicker. I think one in particular springs to mind when Elliot sort of made an arcing run in behind him, McAllister didn't release it. That was a little bit frustrating, but I've seen horrendous halves of football from Liverpool Football Club down the years, and that wasn't one of them for me. It was just okay.
I agree with that, and it's interesting because it was one of those where we were all in different parts. Well, you know, you guys are in the same stand, but different parts. I was in the upper Annie, which has got a fabulous view, by the way. But you were in the cop as pair. All of the action that happens again always it happens down the opposite end. So you've come away feeling Liverpool were crap in the first half as well.
Yeah, it like you mentioned there, it just felt really slow and lethargic at times, and look, that could be down to playing so many games and maybe a little bit of a rotated side. It wasn't that much of a rotated side. It looked a great side. I was actually surprised when, you know, Konate started. I thought, wow, he's pushed Konate to go again. But yeah, I just felt like we couldn't break them down. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, Virgil van Dijk came out and moaned about Manchester United and how there was only one team who wants to win that game. I'm not arsed, because of course Fulham put 11 men behind the ball. It's down to Liverpool to figure out a way to break that block in front of them. And I just don't think there was enough energy in there. There wasn't enough movement. You know, we wanted a couple too many touches. And the only real chances I can remember is maybe a Curtis Jones shot from the Annie Road end. And it's the first time he's got a little bit of space, but it's still outside the box where he can shoot. And it just felt like Liverpool needs to speed it up a bit, needs to be a bit sharper. It doesn't help that the goal was horrific, by the way, that they've scored. You know, Liverpool just don't deal with it time and time again. And that was right in front of me. So maybe that's why. But yeah, from the other side of the pitch, it just felt like we weren't... quick enough on the ball and with movement and getting in between the lines. But obviously in the second half, that did change and we were much, much sharper and much, much quicker.
My thing was, because this is the problem when you start, when you end up in these debates, it's almost like, it's like, I'm not saying it was brilliant. I'm not going to go to bat for that first half Liverpool performance by any stretch. But I was just fine with it. You know, they were ticking along all right. And I think that right-hand side disjointedness was the key to it, because it was a bit like Conor Bradley was like, well, I'm a flying right fullback, so I'm just going to get up and down all day long. If you want to get me the ball, I'll get to the byline and I'll whip it in. And then basically Harvey Elliott and Ryan Gravenberch were doing like a Luke Skywalker and Yoda thing, where they were basically, one was on the other one's shoulders. They desperately wanted to be in the same area of the pitch. And then something in the midst of that, of like, when there's someone who's near you who's moaning about stuff that I don't think requires that level of moan, it does also make me kind of go a bit the other way. So there was a guy who was slaughtering Harvey Elliott behind me, and I was like, he's not the one who needs slaughtering in and amongst that. It was Gravenberch for me, who was the one who looked miles off what we were trying to do. So I was, again, it was ticking along okay, and then they scored, and it was like, oh, right, I hadn't really thought what would happen if they managed to get something down the other end. It just felt like we were just going to sit and watch Liverpool generally build towards a goal and probably score a goal. So we did, I don't know if we made it harder where it didn't need to be, but I was nowhere near as down in the dumps about the first half as whatever. Talking about some of the performances then, Conor Bradley, while we're on it, Clow, brilliant.
Unbelievable. And to sum up his night, he's on the sideline getting some jealous. Jürgen Klopp's having a word with him, and Fulham have kicked off, and he just lobs Klopp out the way, runs on the pitch and wins the ball back for us and puts it on a plate for Darwin Núñez, who I think's a bit unlucky with the finish. But yeah, he the tenacity of him, he was absolutely shattered, but he was just going and going again. He got every last bit out of him in that game. He gave everything. And yeah, what a superb performance by him. He really stepped up. He was our creative spark as well. You know, we talk about Trent. He is the most creative lad in our entire team. And to miss him, but then have Conor Bradley, who was doing brilliant defensively. He pocketed Willian, by the way. I know Willian gets a goal and he's a little bit unlucky. He kind of just gets brushed to the floor for their goal. But 1v1s, Willian didn't stand a chance. He was winning the ball back time and time and time again. And going forward, he was superb as well. So I absolutely loved his performance.
There was a point on, I think it was about 75 minutes, where we had a corner and he's on his hands and stretching out his calves and his hamstrings and stuff on the floor, basically. And I was looking and thinking, there's 15 minutes to go here, lad. Like, this is not a good thing. He's never run that much in his life, has he? And then I don't know whether he gave the free kick away or somebody else gave the free kick away late.
Right at the end, it was him.
He looked like me after about 3 hours after I've had a really heavy curry. Like, he couldn't fucking walk, you know what I mean?
Shades of our five-a-side tournaments in the summer.
Like, yeah. He's walking around like that. After I'm the like, first oh game, my God, yeah. How are you managing to do this, lad? Yeah. He was... The words, you know, Chloe used it there, are unbelievable. For a lad to come in and replace Trent Alexander-Arnold and put in that level of performance, don't get me wrong, we 100% missed Trent Alexander-Arnold, and that's what we were missing in the first half, more than anything. It was someone to just break the play wide open and switch the field. And, you know, obviously Virgil wasn't able to play balls over the top to Mo Salah and then Trent going. It was probably one creative influence too many for us to lose in a game, but he did a job up and down that right hand side.
I was just thoroughly impressed. It's the stupid moments, like the ones that aren't the headline moments, because you can call back to tackles or shots or whatever. It was the moments where it was a 50-50 and he was in a foot race to get the ball and he got it. And you know how many times he ended up in those foot races with Willian. I know Willian's in his mid-30s now and he's obviously well past his prime, but he's still lightning.
He's a good player.
He is a good player, and he's still very, very quick. And that is one of the things that I think is huge. He's deceptively fast. And I'm a little concerned sometimes when you bring lads in, and I think you do this with young players, because you go, look at the talent that they're bringing to the side. They're, you know, really great technicians. And all of a sudden you get a couple in and then you realise, you don't realise until it's too late that you've lost all your pace. So actually having that as an asset is such a huge thing. That's such a difference maker. I've seen lots of young footballers come and go, you know, get a handful of appearances for the Reds and move on. And ultimately, because they didn't have that
physical gear to go to. So to actually see that he's got that, I was just quietly impressed by a bunch of random stuff in the middle of the park where he was just beating people to it more than anything. So yeah, very, very encouraging. And Dan, it's a big week, few weeks for him, really. You know, we're going to talk about Calvin Ramsey in part two, and we'll talk about what we're doing with the fullbacks in general. Mm-hmm. But this is just an opportunity for him.
Yeah, massively so, yeah. And I was equally as impressed as everyone was, really, in his performance. Thought it was full of endeavour, full of desire, full of quality as well, moreover. And the use of him, I find quite fascinating, because it'd be easy to sort of have a young right back, and obviously replacing Trent is nigh impossible. He is irreplaceable in what he brings to any football team, let alone Liverpool. But the use of him in that game, particularly in the second half by Klopp, is fascinating to me, because he's clearly got a lot of trust in him and his ability, because he allows him to go very high up and do that sort of stuff. He allows him to come inside and do a little bit of the inverted stuff as well, which I wasn't sure whether he would do or not, because he did it in pre-season in Germany especially. Yeah. And you thought, okay, that's interesting. Will that translate when it comes to the competitive stuff further down the line? And this is a Carabao Cup semi-final, and he's letting Conor Bradley do a lot of the attacking stuff that Trent does. Very dissimilar in the style and stuff like that, but in terms of positionally, it is sort of the same. So Klopp clearly rates him very highly, clearly has a very high opinion of him. So it's a massive couple of weeks for him, and I don't really doubt, and it's fascinating how football is perceived, because I remember just a few weeks prior to that, it was him and Luke Chambers both played in the Union game, and we both hung them out, well, everyone hung them out to dry, basically both of them, because they weren't good enough, they weren't at it. All of a sudden, the cameo against Arsenal, and that performance against Fulham, and he's the best thing since sliced bread, so it's one of them. But I was seriously impressed, and I think he will lay a bit of a marker down when it comes to the Calvin Ramsey stuff, because Ramsey hasn't enjoyed a good time at Preston, clearly. And I think Conor Bradley, it's his shirt now, that back up to Trent spot, essentially. And I think he's going to prove that over the next few weeks as well.
It was interesting, Chloe, because Owen Beck's on the bench there. You could quite easily have just switched the fullbacks over. You know, that would have been a really easy thing to do. You know, as Chris pointed out, he's just done. I didn't notice it during the game, and then you watch the highlights back and you watch the match. I watched the last half an hour back when I got in, and yeah, he's done. He is.
He even said at one point, "I'm not coming off." Even speaking to Klopp in that conversation, "I'm not coming off." Yeah, so that just shows you his heart again.
But Liverpool wasn't like we'd use all of our substitutes up. You know, there was an opportunity there to take him out of the firing line. And I actually think it goes back to Dan's point there, that trust is huge.
Yeah, it is, and he's proven it with performances. I mean, we referenced the Arsenal game there. Martinelli, you know, was having quite a decent time against Trent, and we just moved Trent further up the pitch a little bit in that kind of six role, put Conor Bradley on, and Martinelli didn't see that ball again, because every time it was at his feet, it was getting taken off him. And that's one of the best wingers in the Premier League right now. And I say that his stats aren't good this season, and let's hope they stay that way. But still, it's Martinelli that he's doing that to. Yeah. And now he's done it again to Willian, who's technically a superb player. And they both like to cut inside. They both have pace, and he can deal with that. He's shown that. And the only thing when I think of him and I look at him, I think, oh, he might be a bit too skinny in a way. But he shows that he actually does have, you know, the strength. And if you could make, you know, what we did with Trent, where we made him and we got him the body where he looks like a warrior, like, we can do that with Bradley as well. And hopefully that comes on even more. So, yeah, he's had brilliant cameos. And I was one of them when they did play in the Union single war one, where I was just like, this is a team of youngsters. Yeah. You can't just throw them in and just absolutely lob all the criticism of them. It was a very, you know, changed team. So I was giving them the benefit of the doubt, and that's because he's a young lad. Yeah. And look at the talent is clearly there. Liverpool need to make sure, though, that we don't overplay him, because we've done that with Stefan Bajetic, where we really need to rely on him. And look at where that's got us. So we've got to make sure that we manage Conor Bradley really well.
I think part of that managing Conor Bradley well was the fact that Klopp did push Konate into the starting 11.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, that's a massive thing that, would he have played as well with someone less senior inside of him? Probably not. So, again, kudos to Klopp for that one.
Yeah, completely. Just to reiterate what you guys are saying about the Arsenal, because obviously I wasn't here for the podcast last week, but he was one of the real bright spots of that game for me. I've come in, and you're right, there's a real fear around have we just capitulated here? Have we given up on the chance of keeping our best possible 11 on the pitch? And I've not seen enough of Bradley to know
what he is. And the concern is that, well, I mean, all the talk was he was playing fullback, but he was seen as a right mid slash right winger more than anything else, and we were converting him back. And when you hear converted back, all I think of is Stuart Downing playing left back for us, or, you know, even Trent playing right back, that you know what you're going to get going front foot, but are they leaving the back door open a little bit? But actually, it was almost like he saw that as a challenge, and he wrote the Martinelli stuff. He did. He really, really did. Very, very encouraging on that one. Let's do it then, another week. Let's have another Darwin Núñez chat. Right now, Chris Pajak, no one in this team has more assists in all comps this season than Darwin Núñez with
it's
10.
Mad, isn't it? Yeah. And just for clarification, is he level with Salah?
Salah's got 9, I think.
Okay, because normally you would say he's top, like, but no one's got more suggests someone's level with him. Yeah. It's the way it's said sometimes,
six
isn't
lads
it?
On 10. Yeah.
But that's a man who's handed a lot of very false compliments out of his life coming through there.
It's true, though. It's like, yeah, someone says it like that, I'm like, okay, just checking. The narrative's changed, hasn't it, in what, 2 weeks of this sort of striker where everyone seems to be getting on his case, and now he's the, you know, the sort of creator and stuff. But again, I think it's how Liverpool and Jürgen are utilising him at the moment, which is getting the best out of him. You know, I know there's conversations to be had about impact sub and all this type of stuff, but right now he's getting into the positions. He's not finishing. Obviously, Andrew Beasley's just put a stat out there that Gakpo, Diaz and Jota have had the same amount of clear-cut chances. I think it's 29 between them and scored 14 goals. He's had 29 clear-cut chances and scored 4 goals, I think it is. So that's not great reading, but actually when you look at what he's doing for the side in terms of creating, getting assists, you know the winning goal he creates the other night against Fulham, he is having an impact on games. And if you believe everybody who looks at the numbers and thinks about the numbers, you know, what he's putting in terms of XG is world-class striker status. He's just not getting the goals yet, but everyone who's into the numbers says it's going to come. Hopefully it does, because if it does, he will be unstoppable.
Well, it's interesting because I think we had this conversation 2 weeks ago on here, Dan, and like, I think the point I was making at the time was Salah's the guy who's getting all your goals. Mm-hmm. No other team has got an additional 20-plus goal a season forward. So provided that he's still churning away and being creative in that role, where the Emil Heskey analogy came from, is that it's kind of okay. This is the beginning of the real test because Mo Salah's not there. But actually, what happened was he just laid on goals for someone else instead. And, you know, and actually, Cody Gakpo ended up being the beneficiary of the chaos that Darwin Núñez caused.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Obviously, he's a huge part of the reason why we changed that game around. His impact on that is of the clear for all to see. But it's a fascinating conversation. I've often wondered whether we need to sort of change our perspective, what we view him as, because obviously we viewed him for a long time as a 9 and just a striker who needs to score the goals. But is he just another one of our forwards who can provide stuff as well? But it all boils down to the fact that the frustration doesn't go away and it stems from missing those big chances, because ultimately, if he wasn't getting into all the positions that he does and getting on the end of all these chances, you wouldn't have to have the conversation. If he was just assisting people and every now and then chipping in with goals like Cody Gakpo does in a similar sort of vein, you'd go, oh yeah, what a lovely forward to have, how boss is this? But because he ends up squandering or missing or whatever it may be, 2 or 3 big ones a game, it feels like, you have to have the negative side of it as well. So it's a fascinating one. I think in the Fulham game especially, I put it down as a bit of misfortune, his misses and not scoring. He probably deserved to get
wrong in that game.
He probably deserves to get on the score sheet once, probably twice. I think Bernd Leno was outstanding in the final half an hour to keep the score down, to be honest. But yeah, it's a good conversation to be having, I guess. And Chris there saying, obviously, if he does start putting him in the back of the net, he will essentially explode. Let's hope that happens. But ultimately, right now, he is producing the goods in terms of impacting games of football in a positive sense for Liverpool. It's not like he's just, for instance, if Erling Haaland was to go on a dodgy run in terms of missing big chances in front of the goal, you'd have to look at him and go, what's he doing for the team? Yeah. We're not having that conversation with Darwin Núñez because it's clear to see what he is doing.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mad one, and I think maybe that the price just does not help him at all, because if he was an 80 mil, you'd all be sat there thinking, it'll come in time. because you've spent so much, and it's Liverpool who it feels like you can't get an 80 mil player wrong, he's going to have a lot more criticism on him. What I would say is I don't know his best position, and that is my one problem. Is I don't, and maybe that's good. Maybe like versatility. We speak about, you know, some of the greatest players under Jurgen Klopp having that versatility, and maybe that's good for him. It just doesn't seem like when you're supposed to be the number nine, that versatility is actually a really good thing for you, because you're the one who's supposed to be getting the most goals. But yeah, his cutback for Cody Gakpo's run, that entire game, he changed it. You know, he gave the Fulham defence something to think about, something different. He kept going time and time again. He'd run at them, if it wouldn't go correct, he'd run in behind instead. And, you know, that chance where Leno literally punches it, and somehow punches it with one hand out of his own area, is ridiculous. And that was from a tight angle, and we keep saying it, from chances where it seems like he's got so little to think about, he's incredible at. But it's the chances where he has too much time, and it's like, it's almost like everything speeds up instead of slowing down, and you're just having that little bit of composure. But we've mentioned it time and time again, if it clicks for Darwin Núñez, we are scary. We're already scary, but if Darwin Núñez starts putting away these golden chances that fall at his feet every single game, and that's a good thing that they're falling at his feet, because he's doing the work to get in those positions, but if they actually start it in the back of the net, Liverpool could become unstoppable.
Can I pose a question? Because I saw our good mate Robbie Lyle involved in this debate the other week, and it was Darwin Núñez or Gabriel Jesus.
Oh, Darwin Núñez every title week.
Careful. Just keep all of the leashes a moment till I finish this. I am just interested in the sort of takes on this, because what Jesus is perceived as, and I'm seeing him get a big pass for his goal scoring. And look, he's had more injury issues. I think I'll double check that. I believe that to be the case. He's played less minutes. But he's seen as this creator. He's the one who knits it together. He's the one who's making it happen for them, for Arsenal.
From the bench.
For that team that can't score goals.
When you say, yeah, exactly, when you're saying creating.
But Darwin Núñez is being slaughtered because he's missing chances. I get the notion of what's being said, but I don't... I agree with the idea that Darwin Núñez is missing chances, and he's missing chances that he should be scoring. There's a number of one-on-ones he's had in the last six weeks, 2 months, that Fernando Torres buries, or Robin Van Persie buries, or Michael Owen buries, or whatever. Take your pick of the elite centre-forwards in the Premier League era, Aguero, whatever. But at the same time, it's this assist thing for me. I mean, look at him right now, time recording, 8 goals, which is not a great goal return for a number nine, but 10 assists. Are we judging them both by the wrong standards almost? Anyone?
Judging Jesus and him by different standards.
Yeah, because Jesus isn't seemingly being judged for his goals. He's being judged for his creativity, but he's less creative.
I think
than
it comes back
Núñez.
To what I think everybody thought Darwin Núñez was. Yeah. And everyone thought Darwin Núñez was going to score us 35 goals a season, because that's what he did at Benfica before he signed for us.
And he ultimately. Can do that.
And he probably can do it. He has the chances to score 40-45 goals a season. Now, for me, you know, I've come on here many times and said I'd rather sing his name when he scores a goal than when he misses and stuff, and that stands true, but that doesn't mean I'm unhappy with the assists, because the assists is just as important sometimes as the goals, isn't it? You know, Cody Gakpo getting that goal, absolutely superb, great finish. Do I think Darwin Núñez finishes that? No, I don't, to be honest with you. I think Cody Gakpo finishes it. So it's great to see Jürgen use him in a different way that might be get the best out of him. The thing with Gabriel Jesus is, his problem is that there's 3 lads in the front line that don't score goals.
Yeah.
And when you're the lad that knits it together, you've kind of got to knit it to somebody. You know what I mean?
Well, do you want to hear the volume to which he's knitted it together so far this season?
Go on, yeah.
He's got 7 goals. Oh, for anyone paying attention, that's one less than Darwin. He's got 3 assists so far this season as well. Now, I will caveat the use of goals and assists with the fact that Darwin, for a start, has played about 400 more minutes this season than Gabriel Jesus, but also he's played in the Europa League and not the Champions League, which will help anyone. You know, that's why if you could compare Cody Gakpo And his goal return is better. Is better. He scored more goals than Jesus, but all his goals have come in cups this season, pretty much.
But that's the other thing why I choose Darwin Nunes, is because Gabriel Jesus just seems like he picks up injuries every couple of weeks, and it just does. And they're not short-term injuries, from what I can remember. They miss him for quite a couple of games. They were playing with two tens against us. There's been times where they've had to lob Havertz up there, which they clearly don't like doing, because Arteta sees him as this kind of eight.
Yeah.
So that's I'm factoring also the fact that I think Gabriel Jesus' injury record isn't great. I know Darwin Nunes has picked up quite a few injuries since joining Liverpool, but it just seems like he misses an odd game or two here, where Gabriel Jesus feels like a longer stint out. And look, he's clearly getting the goals, but for me, for what Liverpool are doing, it's Darwin Nunes, because we've got Cody Gakpo, who we all thought was Firmino 2.0, but it's actually Cody Gakpo at times doesn't always fit our system.
Darwin Nunes is actually Bobby Firmino 2.0. He's got more assists, I think, than Firmino got in the 2018-19 season already.
Fair.
You know, and that's seen as being one of Liverpool's best seasons. Mm-hmm. You know, he's pulling down good goal scoring numbers, but his assist numbers are mad. You know, he's in the territory already of the numbers that Trent and Robbo were getting in the seasons where they were breaking records for full. Yeah.
Just does it in a very different way, doesn't he? Because Firmino was often that dropping deep on the turn and laying it into Salah and Mane as off they went, which is what Gabriel Jesus is effectively trying to do for Arsenal, albeit the lads either side of him, Martinelli or Saka, who on their day, by the way, are brilliant. Neither of them are Sadio Mane nor Mohamed Salah, but they are very good footballers, but they're not at it. Therefore, Jesus' numbers have probably dipped as well, plus the injury stuff like that. But even despite all that, two very different players in terms of stylistically, of course, because one wants to run in behind and make things happen all the time, the other one doesn't. But despite all that, Darwin Nunes wins that conversation for me. And there's loads of frustration around Darwin Nunes, of course there is, and you're absolutely right. Everyone here is frustrated with his missing big chances, and it has cost Liverpool already in this season. Who knows, it may well go on to do so as well. But right now, for what Darwin Nunes is bringing to Liverpool, it's an absolute no-brainer for me.
Could you imagine, though, if he starts putting those big chances away and he is still racking up those assists? Because it's not like him assisting is hindering his chances. No, the two separate things. He's still having so many chances, he's just not burying them. So imagine his stats if he actually started to bury the massive chances that fall at his feet. Like, his stats would be ridiculous by now.
He should have just by brilliant goalkeeping in the last probably three games. I think there's probably been three chances there that are just absolutely magnificent goalkeeping that have denied him. Now, again, this doesn't excuse the so-called simple ones where he's got all the time to do all these. He's burst through the middle, he one-on-one, just slot it and take the goal and run away. They're things to be worked on. But I like the fact that there's a frustration almost, because it's mad. It talks about standards, where I don't see enough frustration with the rivals. You know, I don't see that. I'm quite pleased that there's frustration, because it says we know he's better, we know there's more to come. If there's more to come from Darwin Nunes, then we're going to be amazing. You know, if that actually happens at any point, because my point is, if he just carries on like he is right now, we'll probably be fine anyway. But if he actually manages to start becoming a little bit more lethal in front of goal, then we're going to be fucking unstoppable. Mm. So, yeah, for me, it's Nunes all day.
Did you see him in the tunnel after the game, after the Fulham game, when he basically said in Spanish that the ball just won't go in? He has a brother, I don't know who he's speaking to, he said the ball just won't go in. So there's a definite frustration there on his part, that for whatever reason, seemingly no matter what he does at the moment, he could strike the ball as pure as you like and he could get his finish spot on, but the keeper is somehow denying him. So he's just going through a little bit of a sticky patch. But if his sticky patches come with assists and influence, then so be it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Look, as soon as you said the Jesus to Darwin Nunes thing, I think physically it's not a competition between the two of them. Mm-hmm. And if he's getting more numbers, it's clear, isn't it?
Yeah, for what it's worth, just Julian Alvarez at Man City has got the same number of goals and assists. He's got 11 goals and 7 assists, so he's obviously more prolific in front of goal. And again, he's played Champions League football.
He was the one player who I did think, when you said not everyone's got 220 goal a season things, I was thinking, actually, City might City have might, there,
yeah.
And that's probably the only one.
Yeah. He also takes their set pieces as well, so he's getting assists from set pieces. Darwin Núñez isn't getting assists from set pieces.
Seen him at a free kick against Fulham. That'll be the first and last one
yeah.
of
yeah. Yeah.
And Kevin's back now, so for yeah. a few weeks he won't true. Be taking them either.
But it's an interesting point, you know. Foden's got 10 goals, Alvarez has got 11, Haaland's on 19 for them so far, and Liverpool are just actually taking along at a decent sort of rate. They're moving on to Cody Gakpo, because that's now 9 this season for him. Diogo Jota's on 9 so far. Darwin Núñez is on the 8th. Just sticking with Cody, Chloe, at the moment, he's basically taken on the Takumi Minamino role yeah. from the Cup Double season, where he's just turning up in these competitions and doing the business. The beauty is that the difference between him and Minamino is that I honestly wouldn't be arsed if Gakpo started centre forward in any game of football for Liverpool, and there's definitely more to come. It just feels right now, this is the benefit of having lots of football to play, as much as we're a bit terrified of burnout and what might happen. When you've got basically two guys, three if you count Jota, who all want to play number 9 and they're all scoring goals, well, this is a beautiful benefit of a League Cup semi-final.
Yeah, it is, and it's healthy competition as well. You want that number 9 shirt in terms of starting up top for Liverpool every single game. You want that. You want to be the one who needs to be replaced in that strike position by other players. And Jota, by the way, has been phenomenal since he returned back. He's ridiculous as a footballer. I adore that man. And we're blessed, aren't we? Because it's been a season where I don't think anyone's thought Cody Gakpo's had quite a good season here. But, you know, he's literally the reason why we've got so far in this competition. I think he's scored 4 goals in the 4 games that we've played there. He's also stepped up big time in games in the league where I think Wolves, he gets the equaliser in that Boss 3-1 win where we come back from the death. And it just feels like in big moments you can rely on Cody Gakpo. And we want to see more out of him, but also we've seen the glimmers from last season. We've seen how we've kind of changed the style of football we play, so it doesn't always fit him. But he's brilliant. He reads the space where he needs to be. The danger's always there for him. He finishes. I mean, that's on his left foot the other day against Fulham. Like you mentioned there, I'm not sure Darwin Núñez puts that on the back of the net with his left foot. It probably does from the right-hand side with his right foot, but with his left foot.
Or maybe not.
But yeah, it's so exciting.
He didn't have to dribble it 40 yards before he got there.
But it's exciting, and hopefully, you know, this kind of run can make Cody Gakpo reach a different level, because he's certainly an unbelievable footballer.
He feels like he's just a victim of his own versatility at the moment. Yeah. This season for me is that he just needs to get a run in the team in one position to get that form. But the big plus, in the same way that it is with Núñez, you can see Núñez's all-round game. Funnily, there's a big plus in Cody Gakpo, who doesn't seem to be able to play well at the moment for 90 minutes and yet still impacts games. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've lauded Diogo Jota for that over the years. Yeah. You know, there are plenty of strikers. You go, bloody hell, he's not in the game. And then bang, goal. Wow, brilliant.
Haaland sometimes.
That's why he was on there. Yeah,
he gets about 4 touches but scores 4 goals.
And that's what I think Cody's got. I think what you said there was brilliant. It's his reading of the space. For me, it's how he finds himself in these little positions and just slows down or just speeds up at the right time and drifts away from his man, finds that sort of space and is able to finish. But he needs a run in the side, I think, of one position, whatever that position is, if we want to see the best of him. But that's not to say that he's not doing a good job for the squad at the moment.
I mean, this is the thing, and what a wonderful sort of problem to have, really, is that you've got loads of different ways of skinning the cat. I thought it was interesting, it was on Transfermarkt, got up is like where he's played so far this season. 14 games as centre forward, 5 as attacking mid, 3 as left wing, 3 as right wing, 2 in central midfield.
I'm absolutely shocked he's played 14 times up front, did you say?
Yeah. It felt like 14 times in the mid.
14 minutes managed more. No, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Off the bench.
Yeah, but that just highlights his versatility there. And you mentioned it, as you were talking about prior to you, I was thinking in my head, I don't think he's ever played or started at least 2 games back to back in the same position. Doesn't feel like he would have done that all season. And that, you know, he's a very intelligent footballer. Jurgen Klopp, once again, clearly absolutely adores him because he can fit in so many different positions for him. And he's almost like the perfect squad player, but he's better than that as well. He's a frontline footballer. And for a frontline footballer who you signed for a decent chunk of money and who's coming clearly to be among your best 11, 12, 13 players, whatever it may be, to have slotted into so many different positions and never really got a run in the side, is that down to him in terms of his form hasn't been there? He hasn't warranted a run in the side? Or is that because, as you say, we're constantly having to sort of plug holes here and there, and this lad's injured, he's not in form, so Cody Gakpo will do it. We're missing an eighth again. Cody Gakpo, it feels a little bit like the latter to me.
I agree on that. He is such a good general footballer. My issue is I don't think he's played well in midfield for us this season. He's been used there a little bit too much. And often that has just been availability of other lads, and I do think... go on about it probably too much, but it goes back to a Paul Tompkins thing about your average height of your side, I think, matters when you're defending set pieces. Not necessarily, I think you can be small and be brilliant, be very good aerial, as we've seen with Michael Owen, Endo, pick a bunch of examples. Jota's amazing aerially.
Thiago in the air as well.
Yeah. But there's something in that for certain, just a bit more of a physical presence in the middle of the park. My biggest thing with him is, in a traditional sense, we're a bit worried because we've got this idea of there being a best 11, and we've lived in a world where there's a best 11, and there's a few players who are definitely a legacy of that. Salah, Trent, Van Dijk, obviously the goalie, because that's how the goalies work. But my fear is it's an Aubameyang Lacazette-style situation where we've bought two lads to play number nine, and only one of them's ever really going to get the lion's share of the minutes, because you can't, I don't think you can rotate your number nine and have that successfully work. So the one who's the most versatile and invariably ends up being moved off a little bit, Arsenal had this, where like Aubameyang would play a bit off the left, or then Lacazette would play a little bit wider at times, and neither of them ends up being quite at the level you really want them to be. Okay, Aubameyang gets top goal scorer in 18-19, but you know, that was, and you know, Villa had this with Ollie Watkins and Ings. Liverpool had it, but plenty of times when they had, I mean, they had Anelka, Owen and Heskey, and they played all three of them in a front three. Who's the one who's going to play through the middle? It's going to be Michael Owen. So someone else is going to be asked to do things that aren't necessarily their skill set. And Gakpo feels, I mean, look, we've seen Nunes shifted around a little bit too. And it's funny that Jota might actually be the answer to all of these, by the way, where he might just be the number nine and everyone else might be asked to do other bits. But with this many games of football and with five subs, it's kind of a bit of a... I do feel sorry for Gakpo that he's not being getting more of a run, but at the moment, as long as we're managing to spin his plate, Nunez's plate, Jota's plate, actually we've not even talked about Diaz, who's only just starting, looks like now starting to get into a little bit of form himself.
Salah's plate is always spinning.
Yeah, it never stops. Yeah, so far so good in terms of it all. It just doesn't naturally fit with what we understand from, you've got this guy, he should be your main man, because he's good enough to be your main man.
Because think of it this way, like that side that played Real Madrid in the European Cup final, which was our best side, had never played together before.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean?
The Spurs one.
It's like, that's what happens in modern day football. So we all have this idea of what our best side is. I'd like to see our best side, don't get me wrong. I think we could put...
What is our best side?
I've got no idea, to be honest with you, because...
What's your best side?
Probably right now, Liverpool, probably right now, I'm looking at, I'd like Jota through the middle.
Yep.
I'd like Salah on the right, and I'd like Nunes on the left-hand side is probably right now where I'm at. I think, funnily enough, the Jota thing's so interesting because I sort of see him in some ways, and this is going to sound ridiculous, so bear with me on this one, I kind of see him like our Kevin De Bruyne in that, you know when Kevin De Bruyne's playing for City and he's just allowed to go wherever the fuck he wants? I kind of see Jota as that for us. Okay. Like he comes and he drops into the left-hand side and provides an overload. Then he'll come and drop in on the right-hand side and provide an overload. But then different to him, because he's playing a forward position, he'll be in the box. And there's, I think City have done this really well against us loads of times where Kevin De Bruyne just doubles up with someone and bullies someone on the, you know, quite often it's Trent Alexander-Arnold, and he'll go over there and they'll create a 2v1 or a 3v1 if Bernardo Silva goes over there. Jota seems to just understand where he needs to be and go and support whoever it is and provide. And when he's driving with the ball, for me, you know, it's that he's not always at 100 miles an hour like Nunes. I think that's the big difference between him and it. Maybe it's experience, maybe it's age, maybe it's just games under the belt, who knows? he just runs at the speed that the team need him to run at.
Yeah.
And then he'll just find the pass. Whereas Nunes just bombs forward 110 mile an hour, looks around and goes, where the fuck is everyone? Yeah. Lads, you're too fast. No one can keep up with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I just think he's one of our cleverest players, Jota. So he's always going to be on my side at the moment.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting one. I think if you took a bit of a blind poll at this point, I think a lot of people would go that way, but I think we'd have a really broad spectrum of what people want to see out there, and it made a little bit more complicated, Chloe, by Diaz, you know, in the last couple of weeks. Just feels like it's starting to go right for him again. It's been a bad 18 months for him, really, for a variety of reasons, largely injury, but obviously the family stuff as well. It's more. I think there's more goals to come for him, and that's frightening, because if he scores goals, I honestly, it's the greatest headache any manager's ever had, because you've effectively got five lads who are all in goal scoring form.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mad one, and I think that Arsenal game, he was back to his best. Obviously, Fulham, you could see a bit more. It feels like he isn't stuck in his own head. I think that's what when I first I'll see him come back in the squad, it was when the ball was at his feet. It was like he didn't really know what to do with it. It wasn't coming naturally to him. He was maybe taking a touch too many, or his first touch wasn't actually good enough. He couldn't get the ball under. So, yeah, there's been an improvement in Diaz, and we saw it the first game against Chelsea, that run that we've called the Mane run, where he slips around the back and, he, you know, the slide, the ball into the bottom corner of the net. If he can do things like that more often, then my word, we've got a scary from five to choose from. And they've got to all fight for the place. That's the most exciting thing here, because what they're doing right now still isn't enough. Because when Darwin Nunes is doing what he's doing now, the other day he wasn't starting against Fulham, and yet that can be said because it was the EFL Cup, players need rest and all of these things. But Jota missed out against Arsenal when we all thought he was going to start.
Yeah.
And it's very much, each year are going to have to get a go here. Maybe not Gakpo. Gakpo, your turn might come in the number eight position, sadly. But the others are all going to get their turn, and it's whoever takes them every single week. And we know we don't really like chopping and changing, but it's boss to give, you know, what Diaz does compared to Gakpo on that left, compared to Nunes, it's three different things for a defender to think about.
Yeah.
So if you've dealt with Diaz for 70 minutes, who loves to cut inside, who is really not slow on the ball, but he's just so technically brilliant that his close control's right in front of you, but you can't do anything. If you then just go and tell Nunes to go and do 20, running in behind, speeding at that lad, the lad's going to be stuck in no man's land. He's not going to adjust to it quick enough.
Yeah.
So these are really good assets to have, and hopefully, you know, we'll have a steady set out front three who bags the goals and assists, but you've also got the players off the bench who can come on and be that extra killer, because the thing that Liverpool have been said that they don't do is kill off games soon enough, where Manchester City might be 4-5-0 up, Liverpool might be still 1 or it might be 2-1, and having that rotation for someone to come off the bench and go, here, deal with him.
The West Ham game is a great example of us being a bit more like that, wasn't it? Going, now we're all right, we're gonna batter you here. Well, interesting thought that occurred to me, and I want to get what you guys think on this. So I think Diaz should ask to go and play on the right-hand side while Salah's not there. But I do wonder if there's a little bit of here for Diaz where it's almost like that's a make-or-break thing, because if he lets go of that left-hand side...
Mm.
And someone like Nunes or Jota or Gakpo, there's so much competition on the left, Chris. But there's an opportunity there where I think he could really flourish on that other flank. But it's like a bit like playing musical chairs, or, you know, the grass is always greener kind of situation. It could be the thing that kicks him on, but also it could actually be the thing that destabilises his place in the first 11.
Oh, he'd be brave to do that, because you're only going to do it for a few weeks, aren't you? I think he'd be mental to do that, to be honest with you. And I think that's for the reasons that you've just said there. I think he can do it. And I think there will be a tactical shift to go back to right-footed, right-forwards. You know, like...
Ben Doak's a little hint towards that, isn't he?
Football always changes over time. You know, before Jose Mourinho came into this league, no one played inverted forwards. And then for the last near 20 years, all we've had is inverted forwards, and you think the fullbacks get used to it, and then it just shifts the other way, and then everything comes around eventually. So it wouldn't surprise me tactically if players started to do that more and more, managers started to do that more and more.
You know when it changes? When inverted fullbacks become more of a regular thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I must admit, like, watching Joe Gomez play left-back and defend the fella cutting inside with his right, it looked dead easy.
Just
it's like,
laughing his head
go
off.
Ahead, that's my good foot, lads. And, oh, that's your shit foot, I get it, so we're going to go good on good, Sam, no problem whatsoever. Yeah. It's easy for them, isn't it? But, yeah, look, Diaz is an interesting one. I think having his dad in the stadium has really helped him, funnily enough, recently, and, you know, putting that sort of episode or chapter of his life behind him. He seems primed to kick on, and I think Chloe's right. I think there's a simplification to what he's doing at the moment. It's like, instead of picking the ball up on the touchline, can I pick the ball up just on the edge of the penalty area? Can I take two touches and get a shot off? Let's simplify what I'm doing here, and it seems to be working for him.
Well, that was the beauty of him when we first signed him. He played and it was just uncomplicated. It was basically straight off the street to Colombia, albeit it wasn't because he'd been at FC Porto for a short period of time. But it just felt like he came
hard
in with just
streets.
It just felt like he came in with just complete X factor. It's like, oh yeah, give me the ball and I'll do some mad stuff with it and let's just see what happens ultimately. And listen, didn't always produce the end product. I think Liverpool have had to coach him and to teach him that you've got to do this pressing, this defensive work. So I won't go as far as say we've coached it out of him, that flamboyance and that flair. But it does feel like, I mean, the injury's been a huge burden on him, potentially a little bit of that coaching stuff. Obviously,
I think
the stuff
he's lost
with
his dad. A little bit of pace.
Yeah,
I think he lost a little bit of confidence more than anything in his own body, potentially. Now, we might have just seen the early signs of that coming back to him, where he trusts himself a little bit more now. He trusts himself to go full tilt, because there's no doubt. We've seen it with Van Dijk. Van Dijk, when he came back from injury, wasn't Virgil van Dijk of old, and all of a sudden, he's got back to his best. Footballers, psychologically as well as physically, take some time to get back to anything like their peak, and it looks like the early signs are that Luis Diaz is getting there, because there was a moment in the Newcastle game in particular where he turned, it must have been Kieran Trippier, inside out, left him for dead, got to the byline, and straight away I went, that's Luis Diaz. Yes. Where's that been? And the stuff about him being on the right, I kind of get, but his stock in trade at Porto was cutting in and essentially scoring absolute worldies, like he did against Palace that time in that game. Yeah. So he has got so much going on, Luis Diaz. It's just not been evidenced for so long now. But honestly, if he can just get anything like back to what he was when he first joined the club, with that complete freedom and that just go out there and be Luis Diaz, because we just haven't seen it for too long.
Yeah. The other thing is, in that Arsenal game, he must have had, in my head, 3 one-on-ones where he could have just volleyed it bottom corner across the goalkeeper, and he didn't do it. But yeah, if he was on that left-hand side, he'd have just passed it into the far corner. But it seemed to him like he would try and find the man in the middle, or he'd cut back and take an extra touch and he'd win the ball. And reality was, if you just get 2 shots away, 9 times out of 10, that's a goal, because you've gone across the goalkeeper and Ramsdale couldn't get down quick enough. And I think on the fourth time round, he actually learned to do it, but this time he volleyed it into the roof of the net. And I just think moving him to that right-hand side, it's not natural to him in terms of his positioning of where he'll find himself, because like we've mentioned, he likes to cut inside and pass it, or you know, he's got some power behind it, but he likes to place the ball where to go. And when he had to cut across it in those 3 times against Arsenal, not once did he fancy doing it. It was when he was cutting across it into the top bins that he really fancied it.
It was so good, because the defender's just not used to defending that anymore, are they? Yeah. It's that one touch out in, and he's inside. The defenders are always inside now, because there's cutbacks.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, what's happening?
He showed him the outside, and he went, well, he's hit that and scored. What's happened there? You don't see it anymore.
It doesn't happen, and that's why, again, you can come back tactically to it, but he'd be nuts still to do it, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
He'd be nuts to do it, because you've got to back yourself to beat Salah.
It is interesting. I just wonder whether we'll see something a little different, because I don't think the Harvey Elliott thing has been a rip-roaring success to see him play in Salah's position, as much as I think he can definitely do an interesting impression of it. Not the stretch and defence with pace thing, absolutely not, but there's something to, you know, but again the Arsenal thing was just made all the better for just putting as much pace on the flanks as possible, and that meant Darwin left. I mean, I'd have been happy for Darwin to come on the right. I think I might have even tweeted that at half time. But yeah, that's an interesting option, because Mane first season, isn't it?
I'd like Jota. He's the most two-footed of all of our players, I think, isn't he? He could go either way. But the manager doesn't seem to want to do that. The manager wants him more from the left-hand side, which is mad when you've got Gakpo and you've got Diaz.
Well, the manager's
you've got no Salah.
The manager's the one who
has been so keen to use him on the right as well, because that's what he normally does when Salah's not around and Jota's available. And I think we normally bang our heads against the wall because Jota does lack the pace to stretch in that way. But I agree on the boat-footed thing. It's just interesting on the Diaz one. I really just think it's got like early Sadio Mane things to it. And I call back to, there's a couple of goals he's had disallowed already this season, or you know, not awarded, which has been him going across the goalkeeper from that kind of direction. And the assist he gets for Darwin at the Emirates when the game he gets injured as well, where he goes over to that side and pulls it back across.
Do you remember his first ever goal for Liverpool at Anfield, where a ball's just been, he's run off the shoulder, a ball's been slipped through, he takes one touch and dinks the goalkeeper.
Norwich.
And it might have been. Yeah. And from that moment, I thought, my God, like, he's world class. And he's had a horrific injury. But before that injury, he was possibly one of our best players that
season.
He's
never really got the goals as he did. That was the one thing that was aimed at him that season. You know, he carried us on the quadruple run or whatever, but he never got the goals.
And yet, when he gets put in those positions, he scores.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? It is mad. And it just makes you wonder whether it's a bit of a tactical shift. And it's so much what we do still leans towards Salah, but it gears. And that's where Darwin's flourished, has gone, I'm just going to stick myself to Mo Salah. And the best way for me to get in this team is to basically make sure that I am the best person for Salah's career I can possibly be. And then all of a sudden, you've got Diaz, who's 10 yards deeper on the left hand side, going, Where is everyone? And then when he's put with Ryan Gravenberch, who's then stood in the positions he wants to run into as well, it's not necessarily helped him.
The other thing with this, sorry, I know you wanted to move on, but the other thing when you discuss the forwards, we never talk about the pressing side of things enough, I don't think. Like Liverpool, when we won the league, we were absolute pressing monsters. Right now, we've kicked it into another gear over the last maybe month or so. Like, we're back at the point where, for PPDA, passes per defensive action for the other side, well, for us, sorry, we're the lowest in the league. I think it's like 6 point or 9 point something passes from the opposition side before we put a defensive action in, which is considerably the highest in the league again. And it was much higher, and we've brought that down over like the last month or so. So what Klopp's been able to do when he's rotating these forwards is he's keeping that press fresh. And like, all of a sudden, like Arsenal played brilliantly against us in terms of the press, but in every other game I think our press has been better than the opposition's, and that's something to rotate in your lads in and out.
Just to bring it back to the Fulham game, because it was a few raised eyebrows, and I was talking to my dad about it last night, and he was saying I think Nunes should have started, or I think the substitute should have started that game. But it's, again, this is all part of the strategy, is it's actually now about keeping it up for 95-100 minutes. And you're almost better off having a weaker side to start the game, provided you've got that extra, we need to have those legs off the bench to be able to keep that up. That's almost been our game plan for the year. So yeah, long may it continue. Just too quickly, I want to do a bit more on these, but you know, it is what it is. Gravenberch and Curtis Jones, let's do them together, Dan, which sounds like fun. I think Gravenberch I think we're trying desperately to play him into form.
Yeah.
You know, they've used him from the left. They started to use him a little bit from the
right. We should start passing to them, because his first touch isn't helping him. Yeah. He's shaped poor form in that game.
Top Fulham game.
But I get it, because there was a point a month or so ago when I was thinking, why is Curtis not playing more? Why is Harvey not playing more? And we were persistent with Gravenberch, persistent with Szoboszlai. You were both having a bit of a sticky period. Mm-hmm. And I think what it boils down to is Curtis gets it. Curtis can come in. Curtis is in our best 11.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're a million miles off Harvey Elliott being in there as well. You know, again, it goes back to another yard of pace, half a yard of pace, and 3 or 4 inches. He'd be in that team without a shadow of a doubt every week. But we're still playing to get everyone up and running. And Gravenberch at the moment remains a little bit of an enigma, because you can see flashes of what he does, but the more he's playing of late, I'm starting to question what it is he actually does for us.
Yeah, there's a massive understanding of what's required element in all of this. I think Curtis Jones absolutely gets that. And moreover, it's more than that as well, because for a long time earlier on the season, I was saying, you probably do play Jones because he offers you that balance and he allows those around him to flourish, etc., etc. But a bit beyond that, that's doing him a disservice, to be honest with you. He's actually just a wonderful footballer in his own right, and the stuff he does when he's in possession is also brilliant. And he is another one, by the way, we speak about confidence. He is oozing with confidence right now. He is absolutely feeling himself.
Was it
so,
four and f- how many?
Curtis. Yeah. Yes, I don't know. But even his all round play, like that touch he takes on the edge of the box, and just the ambition and the audacity to try stuff and for it to come off is just an absolute joy to behold. But yeah, with Gravenberch, it's an interesting one. I don't think we're a million miles removed from people sort of banging down the door to say Gravenberch needs to be starting more games. But I actually put it down to a little bit of a lack of footy thing, and I don't know how long I can carry on making that excuse for him. But the fact he barely kicked the ball in anger at Bayern Munich last season definitely hasn't helped him. He'd never put a run of games whatsoever. He barely played 90 minutes across the entire season, certainly not in the Bundesliga. So I'm willing to give him a little bit of a pass. There's clearly talent there. There's clearly ability there. I don't think he gets what's required of him. And when he plays alongside Szoboszlai in particular, neither of them two are on the same sort of wavelength. Or, more importantly, they're both trying to do two similar things in similar areas of the pitch, so it's not quite working. But Gravenberch has got loads going on, like absolutely loads. He's a top, top talent. We shouldn't write him off. For 30 million we paid will forever be a snip. We've seen it at Ajax already. And actually, although earlier on the game, him stopping the ball going out for throwing by handball, and it wasn't his brightest moment, he produced the best moment.
I've forgotten all about that.
I don't remember that.
Do you not remember that?
The ball bounced, it was going for a throw, and he was stopping it. Instead of letting it go, he caught it inside the
mental
pitch.
But in the second half, that summed up him for a while. But in the second half, just before he went off, actually, he produced the best moment from Liverpool. Yes. So you can see there, there's clearly something, but sort of to conclude him at the moment, it's a little bit frustrating, a little bit rough around the edges, and it's just not quite happening.
Love him. Yeah. I reckon he could become a monster for Liverpool. I think he is brilliant. Technically, he's incredible. And, you know, we've mentioned them going through a little bit of a sticky patch, but, you know, he stepped up in big games as well. You know, earlier on in the season, I remember us all thinking, oh my God, why the hell have Bayern Munich sold him? For 30 mil nonetheless. Like, what on earth? And players go through up and down patches. He's a young lad. He's getting used to the football, getting used to the pace of the game. The Premier League is so much more intense, so much faster. And at the beginning of the season, I turned around and was like, he's not really completed 90 minutes for Bayern, so we can't expect him to do that now. It's now 20 games into the season, so I need you to start doing that, Ryan. But there was times where we saw it for 45 or we saw it for 60. I mean, his assist against, who was it in our first Europa League game? And the whip he gets, he's running at full speed and it's like he should dislocate his hip by doing the movement to get the ball across for Luis Diaz, I think it was. But you've seen it. He's got it there. Liverpool just need to make sure they can tap into that but keep it for 90 minutes. And yet, last couple of games, he's not been good. His first touch has been absolutely horrific, I'll give him that. It felt like every time he got the ball to feet, he'd lose it. But if you can get him on the half-turn and you can get him with some confidence, and we've spoke here, you know, we've talked about Cody Gakpo. He's not had two games where he's played back-to-back. Ryan Gravenberch really hasn't, because Curtis Jones has showed up and said, aye, lads. And you've had Wataru Endo, who's shown up when McAllister's been injured, or, you know, McAllister could have been a left-side centre-mid if Endo was still playing. And you've had Szobo, who we've told to go again and again and again and swap with Harvey Elliott. So he's not got a full rhythm. And we're just, like, lobbing him into games. And sometimes we're lobbing them into games where we've done a lot of rotation as well. That can't be hindered. So I think he will be phenomenal. I have no, you know, worries about that. I just think we need to somehow get him in some rhythm.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt that there's a talent there. There's a really talented footballer in there. For me, I'm quite relaxed about it. I mean, that's the beauty. You know, we signed, you know, four new midfielders in the summer. They've all had the moments so far this season where we've gone, oh yeah, there's a good one. He's the one now, which is mad to think because of Wataru Endo, where he's a little bit of a free hit. You know, I don't think he was bought for the first 11. Mm-hmm. So I was like, bought for the first 11, plays for the first 11, is a nailed on starter in all of your big games on that right hand midfield slot. He's almost like, he reminds me of when we signed Torres, but also then signed Babel a little bit later on, or in that same window, where buy your main guy, but if you're going to build your team around a style of footballer, and you haven't got any other footballers like that, go and get another one, because if that lad then gets injured, you're screwed. You know, and that's where, I mean, it's not the best example perhaps, but you know, you had Fernando Torres and we had David and Go, and he was nowhere near the level, but he was functionally quite a similar sort of thing. He was good on the shoulder, he was a decent finisher. I like Gravenberch, and I think it's
But it's an interesting spell for him now because everyone else feels like they're a bit more settled than him. I think ultimately changing the side of the midfield in the last couple of weeks is probably not necessarily going to help him. Probably speaks to how good Curtis has been, really, more than anything else. Because I was a little concerned for Curtis's future because Gravenberch seemed to be getting the nod ahead of him a bit more than I think was maybe due from what I was seeing on the pitch. But Curtis Jones is absolutely flourishing and Gravenberch is just... Yeah, if he's only a squad player for us, then still 30 million.
These things happen. I don't think he'll be a squad player. Deep down, I genuinely don't. The thing is
I'm saying at the worst, I don't think he'll be worse than a squad player as well.
And 30 million is a steal no matter what, because it doesn't feel like a gamble. But also, we weren't saying this too long ago where Curtis Jones had got a red card and he came back and he was actually really off the pace and we were sat there like, Curtis Jones is in our starting 11 and all of a sudden he stepped up. Mm-hmm. Ryan Gravenberch just needs to go through that. He needs to have the moment where maybe he's got to dig deep and really get through it and then shine through and step up when called upon. And the good thing about him is we're not having to call upon him that much because... You've got Curtis Jones, who's playing out of his skin. Mm-hmm. So I think it's good. How old is he, by the way? Just for knowledge, because...
21, is he?
21. Gavin Burke is 21, yeah.
Silly.
He was the perfect Naby Keita replacement. He plays in a very similar way. Like, you know, just wants to drive forward with the ball, except he's fit. We've swapped the fella who wasn't playing for us for 50 million quid that we signed him for. And we brought Ryan Gravenberch in with a dead eye ceiling.
Oh, yeah, I was
going to
say that.
It's huge.
And he's also like a unit.
Yeah, he's massive. He's dead tall. He's dead strong. He's a little bit. He's not patient enough at the moment for me. Mm-hmm. He wants to do everything and go forwards, which is actually what his best asset is as
bit,
well.
He's a bit like...
He's like a puppy, mate. Well, just wants to fucking go for a run.
A bit the opposite
time.
Of Curtis Jones in some regards. People talk about Jones holds on too long. Mm. Gravenberch is a little bit too eager to make things happen at times, and that's just experience.
My only concern with Gravenberch right now, and this is something Curtis Jones has done brilliantly ever since he sort of had the breakthrough into the first team, is he came as this raw academy kid who just was incredible to watch and off the cuff made things happen all the time. He's been able to take on Klopp's instructions and learn what it is to be a Jurgen Klopp midfielder and to sort of do the defensive stuff, do the pressing, do all that type of stuff. Ryan Gravenberch, I don't know if he's ever, I hope he does, I'm not quite sure he's going to take all that on board. He might always be this a little bit eccentric, flair type, bit of a mad turn, make things happen just out of nowhere. He's got tons and tons of ability. I just don't know if he's ever going to do the hard work that you need to do to be a Jurgen Klopp midfielder.
Well,
I hope
if he doesn't,
he
won't be.
Well, exactly.
Yeah,
that's my only very small concern right now.
If he could just train alongside Thiago for a couple of months, because he's got that.
I mean, wishful thinking.
I know, yeah.
He's got that. So Thiago in full training.
He's got the ramp up. It's 10 games and then... Yeah, okay, maybe.
You'd have to not play him in games just to train.
Yeah. But he's definitely got that little bit of quality to him. And I'll be honest, I've enjoyed a couple of the cameos late on where he's been more of a two in midfield and he's been a bit deeper. And he's not then being... He's out of everyone's way a bit more then and he can just actually just be the silky player that he is, just, you know, in terms of transitions and turning around. And I like him. I think he's a really good player. It'll come good, but I just thought it was an interesting point that he has, you know, I think Szoboszlai plateaued a touch. He's obviously been injured. Gravenberch, it didn't work for him in the Fulham game, but I've no doubt it'll come. No doubt it'll come good. And just lastly on Curtis, I didn't realise this. He's about to turn 23, Curtis Jones. Like, and this is the thing, he's about to start entering, he's about to be the age that we buy footballers at. So Liverpool are very good at buying 23-year-old footballers who go on to be absolutely sensational. We forget this sometimes, that it's a bit of a problem with young footballers where you have to watch their development and it taints your opinion on them sometimes.
They make mistakes on your watch, don't they? Yeah. And that's nothing you can get away with. But Curtis Jones has been a revelation. If I was being hypercritical of him, he still does hold on to the ball slightly too long, but not in the way that I think a lot of people think. I was referencing the Fulham game. He grabs the ball on the edge of our area and runs with it past the halfway line at one point when there's just a pass there to the left-hand side. I'm like, let the ball do the work and run up the field. Like, there was no need for you to run up the field. We could have been further ahead if you'd have just played
ball
the pass.
Ball moves quicker than you possibly
exactly,
can.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? That's my thing. I actually like Liverpool holding on to the ball and slowing it down and going back to the goalkeeper because I recognise that when they're five men and five men men and a goalkeeper, spread them out and give yourself a chance to play through them before they get back into the shell.
Yeah,
that's what Liverpool do. It's what the old Italian side from the 90s have always done. Go back to the back. The team comes out, spread space, go forwards, try again. Doesn't work, go back. Kerr Jones does that better than anyone for Liverpool.
Yeah, no, I do. I'm really impressed by him, and because he's one who's just taken an undue amount of stick over the years. I haven't followed so many people over the last like 3 or 4 years who've just, apropos of nothing, like in random periods where people aren't playing, just decided to go into like tirades about him not being at the level. Whereas at worst, a bit like what I was saying about Gravenberch, at worst he's just a solid footballer. Maintain this forever. That everyone talks about Man United sides that won the league when they were dominant, and they talk about Giggs and they talk about Scholes, but like that team had Gary Neville's in it, and it had Darren Fletcher's in it, and it had John O'Shea's in it, and it had, I throw Gary Neville under the bus as such there, he was a bit better than that, but it had tons of lads who just came in and played football matches for them, and loads, like they had Park Ji-sung in one of the best attacking Man United sides of all time. He was amazing. But like they had Rooney's and Tevez's and Ronaldo's and Berbatov's and all this kind of stuff. But you've got to have lads who can just come in and play football for you. You need them. The thing with Curtis is that all of a sudden, and not really all of a sudden, since the back end of last season, he's found the tactics have changed, and this lad who was never quite the right fit for the genie midfield and never quite had the output to play in Mane's position, all of a sudden it's somewhere in between, and he's like, this fits everything that I do absolutely perfectly. Gomez is a bit like that as well at fullback. All of a sudden, fullbacks have become a bit more energetic, a bit more run up and down, and do, you know, all around good things. And yeah, footy can work that way for you sometimes. And Jones is flourishing, which is great. Right, quick break from us. When we return, we're going to be going through some other Liverpool related business, talking to Fenger and Eriksson, Salah at AFCON, and Calvin Ramsey's recall from loan. Stay tuned.
It is January, it is 2024, and we've got an incredible legend prize draw for you this month. Yes, it is Kostas Tsimikas signed Liverpool shirt. He signed it. He was very kind to sign it. He's done an incredible job for Andy Robertson over the last few weeks, months. We can't wait to give this one away. If you want to get yourself in the hat to win that incredible prize, then you need to be a legend subscriber at redmenplus.com. Every single month, without fail, we will give away something incredible. This month, as you've seen, it's the Kostas Tsimikas shirt signed by the man himself. So all you need to do is get into that legend tier, and you're in with a chance. Do it. Do it now. The best there is. Best there was. The best there will be.
Ooh, okay. Is he the 50th best signing of all time?
They'll tell you that they're the best player. He's the best player they ever played with.
Famous photos of him being carried off and stuff, and that was what he left everything on the pitch.
Shankly 2.0, and what happened, you know, maybe we see today with what Klopp's trying to do with his 2.0.
How can he be this good? He's so much better than everybody else that's ever played the position.
Yeah, okay, fine. I mean,
he shouldn't be ahead of Souness in the pecking order.
47,000 people wanted to pay him £1 a week to stay. That tells you all you need to know about what we thought of that guy at that moment in time.
He should be a lot higher.
Yeah, world class. I think I'm world class.
Quite clearly, who am I to question the vote?
He was astonishing. You know, his ability, his agility was just second to none.
Oh, have I forgiven him yet?
He might be in my top 10. That's how much love I've got for him. I've done more for Liverpool than at the moment. Am I in this list?
Hold up. What was that?
Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Yes, get involved with all the amazing stuff we've got going on over on RedmenPlus.com. And if you want to try it out free for an entire month, then you can do. Go to RedmenPlus.com, use the code KLOP. Get yourself a free month, try out the podcast, try out the videos, try out the interviews, documentaries, and get both episodes of our 50 Greatest Liverpool Signings of All Time free. And if you like it, then stick around, because I don't know whether you've heard, but Liverpool are fucking brilliant at football again, so it promises to be a very, very exciting run into the season. We're going to be here for all of it, so make sure you are with us on that journey too. Yeah, use the code KLOPP, K-L-O-P-P. Yes, thank you. PP. Yes, outstanding stuff. Okay. Not obviously particularly joyous news. Former England manager Sven Goran Eriksson was in the news last week, revealing that he's found out that he's got terminal cancer. One of the things that came out of these interviews, Chris, was he revealed that he'd always been a Liverpool fan. I definitely knew this fact. It's not one I've thought about for a long old while. I remember being linked with the Liverpool job many sort of moons ago. But what it's led to off the back is a number of people are Liverpool fans online and what have you, and even Robbie Fowler and co joining the call to see if they can get him to manage the Legends team in March. I love this. Like, it's one of the, you know, every now and again, our fan base, our football club, and it's not that it's done and dusted or sorted or whatever, but people just come out with, some crap stuff over the times. I've heard, like, that Phil Coutinho Mane song was one of the greatest abominations ever to emerge from Liverpool's fan base. This is just, if they can make it happen, would be wonderful.
It'd be wicked for him, wouldn't it, to be fair. Like, it's one of those things, isn't it? I think, you know, there are people in football that are respected by almost everybody unilaterally. And Sven-Göran Eriksson seems to be one of those guys, and, you know, the fan base putting their arms around him at a time when obviously he's got, I think it's just about a year to live, isn't it? It's a pretty cool thing. Like, and if you can make a dying man's wish come true, then why wouldn't you?
No, absolutely. I mean, obviously, Chloe, I won't come to you on the Sven-Göran Eriksson thing, because it is very much before your time. But it's mad, isn't it? And because he was in that clutch of managers where England were trying different things and getting, like, foreign managers in, which worked for a while. Everyone got that excited, and there were songs. Did Ant and Dec sing about a song about him? I don't know.
Sven-Göran Eriksson was.
I don't know if that was them, but it's you know, it kind of makes me like managers more when the nation turns against them in some regard. So I've never harbored any ill feeling towards Sven-Göran Eriksson from his time as England manager. It looks like, as Chris says, he's still really highly regarded. So yeah, absolutely fair play to him.
Sorry, I thought you were coming to this club.
Yeah, I was. No, yeah. So very much not to Chloe.
No, I saw him earlier this morning he did an interview, and I don't know who it was with, but he basically said to them, have you heard about Liverpool fans and their push to, you know, get you to be the manager of that Legends team? And he said, no, I didn't know it was a thing, but, you know, I'd love to. It would be my dream. So, yeah, it's boss to see, and hopefully we can, you know, make that dream become a reality, because, you know, that day will be remembered because of the opportunity that he's being given. And it's just, it's boss, isn't it? Because
we're not giving him the Liverpool reins in a run-in, you know what I mean? This is a charity game of football.
It's a lovely game.
You know what I mean?
Let's not stress the man out.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a lovely situation, and hopefully we can, you know, do that for him. And it's also boss because it's just a Liverpool fan. Everyone, yeah, all of us have wanted to either play for Liverpool or be a part of Liverpool in some capacity, and him being a massive red, his dad being a massive red, and him growing up being that massive red, it's boss to see, and hopefully we can do that for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm all in on something like this. I think it's a wonderful thing. Right, let's move on to AFCON. Let's do Mohamed Salah. Dan, I finished watching the United Spurs game, which we're going to talk about on the Bias Footy Pod this week. And my dad, he flicked over to the last sort of 15 minutes or whatever of the Egypt Mozambique game.
End to end, great game of football.
That final 15 minutes was, well, 15 that ended up being half an hour. Yeah.
Okay, maybe the last 15 minutes going into extra time. But when I switched on, it was very much Egypt just couldn't break them down. And there was silly little fouls that just weren't fouls, and yellow cards being given for nothing.
Football.
Ultimately. Yay.
Yeah, I mean, Sally, he obviously saves the day, doesn't he? Gets him a draw. But then I think the result after that sort of throw the cat amongst the pigeons again, because Cape Verde beat Ghana, so that group remains somewhat up in the air. But it's a difficult one, isn't it? I think loads of Liverpool fans would like to have seen him miss that penalty. He gave it his best shot, because it wasn't the best penalty I've ever seen.
It was either nearly the worst or a great, or one of the greatest pens ever.
Too much post. When the ball goes, you say side netting for a pen, don't you, Beard? But not the other side netting that you're aiming at, ideally. Unless your cannon's off the post and flies in the opposite one. You're like, oh, I don't know about that.
Sounds unstoppable.
Oh, I don't know, mate. I wasn't sure. And his assist.
Apparently he hit the bar with a penalty that went in.
Yes,
in a warm-up game as well.
To keep his arse, yeah. And he got an assist in that game as well for essentially missing
that wasn't an assist.
Hey, who got the last touch before the fella scored? Mo Salah. Thank you.
He swings a leg at it and misses it. It hits him on the ankle or something, falls to this lad who brilliant finish, by the way. On the half turn, facing the other way. It's not an assist, but we'll give you it, lad.
Yeah. I have to be honest, I was sat there watching that, shocked to find them 2-1 down. And there was a little thought as they were toiling desperately, trying to get themselves back in the game, thinking, ooh, wouldn't this be nice if, you know, Egypt just got knocked out pretty quick? And I'm sure the entire nation of Egypt would wholeheartedly disagree. And bear in mind, you're entitled to disagree. And I fully support your right to disagree with me on that one, by the way.
But,
fuck off. I want Salah back as quick as possible. Simple as. And, you know, that helps. I mean, a draw doesn't necessarily make that loads worse. But, Chris, yeah. I'm mentally prepared to lose Salah and Endo for almost the longest possible period. Endo's almost certainly going to go deep in the Asia Cup. This does open the door that Salah might have a bit of an early dart, which would be great.
Yeah, I think it's very start of February, I think, with a week off for himself, isn't it? The earliest that we could get him back, obviously. I don't really think they've got a chance of winning this one.
The fifth favourites for the competition.
Yeah, they got to the
Egypt
final, didn't they, last time against Senegal and stuff. But it feels like, you know, this is probably Mo's last chance to actually be the talisman and carry a team, because he's good enough to carry a team still. You know, in a few years' time, whether he'll still be there, you can question, can't you? So this feels like if they get knocked out now, I actually wonder whether there'd be a mental impact on Salah. Like, he'd come back a little bit disappointed, and would he be all firing on all cylinders, but I'd like to find that out.
Yeah.
At Liverpool.
take your chances.
I'm going to take your chances with that one.
Give that one a go. Yeah. Which option you pick? Yeah, I'll try that one. I'll try that one and
Let's see what happens.
I've seen him come back from losing a final, devastated. They're not going to win it. So, like, yeah, have him back. He looked. You know, you're too much in body language and watching footballers and football, particularly in games.
He looks great, though.
He does. Much better. He looks less vagrantish now that he's cut it a bit shorter, a bit smarter. Great. But judging the body language of a footballer in a football match that I've only watched the final 15 minutes of is not fair. But I just watched him and thought, he looked like a lad who went, This was a shit idea. What am I doing here?
We've got a new haircut. There's no cameras.
We're crap anyway. And we're getting beaten by a worse team. What am I doing? I'm missing big games of football. I'm missing semi-finals of League Cups. I could be banging goals in and on the hunt. Nah. Hopefully he just gets the leave and comes out.
There's no way that we get him back for the Arsenal game, even if he goes out straight away.
Arsenal game's possible. That's the fourth of Feb. Yeah. Okay. Chelsea not.
It's after the group stage ends, after the FA Cup fourth round weekend, yeah. I think, is when it ends.
So the 28th, okay.
But the thing is, we talk about this like him having time off. I don't think they will get time off because they've just been playing anyway. They tend to come back pretty quick. If they win it, I think you'd give them a few days off to celebrate or whatever. Mm. But I mean, like Onana left last night for Man United. Cameroon play today, I think, or tomorrow.
He couldn't fly because of the weather.
Well, hilarious. Yeah. You know. It's possible to have quick turnarounds on these things.
Is he still playing in their game though?
I very much doubt it.
Yeah,
he'll join the tournament, but not in this.
Right.
Game,
last thing before we go, Calvin Ramsey, Dan, recall from loan. Yep. Luke Chambers has gone out to Wigan. It's an interesting sort of like flip for Liverpool, this, isn't it? Because Luke Chambers looked like the one who was kind of being ushered towards the first team. Mm. Owen Beck's now back in there. He's the senior player of the two at a whopping 21 years old. There's a weird sort of balance here between they want lads to play, but also they do need a little bit of cover for the next week or two while we get through this sort of period. The Ramsey one's a bit interesting. I don't know, because we've just been singing the virtues of Conor Bradley. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like this is one where he's in with a shout of being a first team player for us here, or is he just going to be straight back out again?
I think they'll find somewhere else for him to go on loan, to be honest with you. I don't see them sort of watching Conor Bradley do what he's done in recent weeks and then just sort of discard him and say, oh, but you can go out on loan and we're going to stick with Ramsey. I don't see that. And also, Ramsey's done nothing, with all due respect, in the first half of the season to warrant coming in and being an option for Liverpool Football Club. And listen, the talented lad there, but for various reasons now, it just hasn't worked since his move from Aberdeen. Essentially, he picked up an injury on arrival, essentially. They uncovered a back injury that sort of was undiagnosed at the time. Sounds a bit of a mess. He's had COVID during his time at Preston. I know Ryan Lowe, the manager there, has spoken highly of him in terms of him around the club, but from a football point of view, it just hasn't worked at all. So I think Liverpool will find somewhere else for the second half of the season. But Chambers, just to touch on him as well, by all accounts, had an absolutely incredible debut for Wigan on the weekend. So that's a positive. And I think there's a future there for him. With Beck, it's fascinating. I wonder whether the Simicast and Robertson return dates will play a part, because ultimately, if he plays a single minute of football for Liverpool, he can then only go back to Dundee. So
which
it's a really interesting
one. Maybe he didn't play in that game where we thought maybe Joe Gomez might become the right back.
Why put him on the... I mean, obviously break glass
just in case
he gets injured, I guess, but...
The only thing I'm at least happy about is another, medical group at a football team signed Ramsey and then discovered an injury, which is very much what we did. I find it mad that we signed the lad and just did not know how injured he was.
I'm not sure we had any medical staff at the time.
No, we were short, weren't we?
I actually think this is interesting. When you wrote the agenda for this, I was like, there's a bigger conversation here, and it's around Liverpool's head of loans. He went in the summer, David Woodfine. He'd been there since 2014. There was something in the back of my mind going, I'm sure the head of loans went out. So I went and checked it up. He signed from Portsmouth in 2014, came along with Michael Edwards, worked as, he was the scouting and recruitment manager in 2014, then head of football projects in 2017 until he took over as head of loans. And I don't think we've replaced him. And if you look at the loans that Liverpool have had this season, Carvalho recalled after playing 360 minutes across 15 appearances. Nat Phillips started just four games. Owen Beck is the one that books the trend, 17 appearances, rave reviews, couple of goals. Rhys Williams, no appearances for Aberdeen. James Balaghizi, seven appearances for Wigan, only 414 minutes though until he got a hamstring injury, recalled. Calvin Ramsey, not played anywhere. Has he played anything? For
I think he's played two games.
A couple of bits, nothing.
Yeah, nothing basically. Made, yeah. So pretty much all bar Owen Beck, all of the loans that we've put out this season haven't worked, and we've not had a loans manager whose job it is to find the club where they're going to play and stuff like that.
Did you mention talk of Tyler Morton then?
No, no mention of Tyler Morton there, sorry. And then, so that's a big question. Again, we talked about Julian Ward and Michael Edwards leaving and what's going on behind the scenes. I actually feel this falls into that, where all of these things, for the most part, haven't gone well or as well as Liverpool want, and they're recalling them to send them back out. That, and there was talk of an internal promotion for somebody. I found an article Neil Jones had written, but I don't think that it's not on Liverpool's website. I went through all the staff and there's no head of loans anywhere on there and stuff, so...
The thing I thought, just touch on Fabio Carvalho, the quote that came out from Leipzig was not great about him, was it?
But he scored at the weekend, didn't he?
No, he set up. Yeah, well, yeah. He set up.
he got an assist
for Tyler Morton scoring one of the goals of the season.
Good goal, mate.
It was a very good goal.
He's let his brother claim that, didn't he?
Do we know the quote?
I'm going to paraphrase it. I haven't got it directly in front of me, but it was along the lines of, he said, like, we really wanted him. We actively chose Carvalho, and he's a good lad. He's got a good attitude. But then he came up against a challenge for his space.
He didn't want competition.
And basically
didn't
want to face the challenge of fighting for his place, basically is what he said.
And
which
he signed
is not
that
great.
Xavi Simons from PSG. He's like a wonder kid, isn't he? You know what I mean? And so it's an interesting one for him, Mike.
But yeah, the whole, obviously the loan for Tyler Morton's going really well so far, isn't it, Dan? So there's a bit of hope for Carvalho in there. He goes straight into the team, plays 90 on his, you know, days after moving. Does get an assist for Tyler Morton, but which is, I quote this again, speak to my dad. It's like when Curtis Jones got that assist for Salah, was it, I think, is it maybe even like a City goal?
The Man City one.
Yeah, when he just beats like five players, like Curtis Jones, like, yes, and I will take the assist for that. Thank you very much.
Amazing, isn't it? No, yeah, you're right. I mean, the Carvalho to Hull move is interesting. There's two schools of thought on it, really, for me. There's one, which you've just alluded to there. Maybe it lends itself to not having a challenge for your first team place, but also, does it speak to Carvalho facing him reality of the situation, really, and going, I just need to play footy, because there was interest from Southampton, Leeds, I think Leicester even, all at the top of the championship. I think Wolves were keen on him as well in the Premier League, so he could have gone to any of them and maybe sort of played a part in their squad and got minutes here and there, but he's looked at that and gone, that's not enough. I've had a first half of the season with nigh on 300 minutes or whatever it is. I need to play week in, week out and to be one of the main guys, and he's chosen Hull, it looks like, for that reason, so credit to him for that. And I think he just needs to reignite his career. It's interesting how all the talk, every time he gets mentioned in Liverpool circles, remains Liverpool still see a future for him, he's still part of their plans, etc, etc. But yet, now we're 18 months removed from signing him after chasing him for 6 months, and I don't know where he's going to fit eventually. Not quite sure what it looks like. So
it all feels like holding his value there. That to me, just Liverpool being like, we're not going to tell everyone we don't want him, because ultimately we think he's going to win.
Putting it all back in the box, isn't it? Put him back in the Championship, see if he can get a few goals. His value will hopefully be there or thereabouts what we paid for him again, and then you've got an interesting decision.
Wasn't it mad when Harvey Elliott was booed by Fulham fans, by the way?
I believe it at 16,
they hold a grudge, then, Fulham fans, don't they?
I've got no idea what that's about.
I mean, to be honest, it's a football club that once had a statue of Michael Jackson outside it, so the less said, the better. Plenty more conversation from us to come on the Bias Football Podcast following straight after this on redmenplus.com. Perfect opportunity to use your Klopp code. Just saying. We're going to be talking about the fear instilled in the hearts of everyone by the return of Kevin De Bruyne and more Everton misery, just to balance things out in terms of happiness, as Everton face another point deduction for breaking financial rules in the Premier League. Head to redmenplus.com. Join us for the Bias Football Podcast, and we'll see you over there. Ta-da.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.